Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Should we get started? Do I need to hit this?
Wow.
You probably have to eat the mic. Not close.
It's my first big whack. Okay. I'd like to welcome everybody out to the Board of Trustees for Cache Valley Transit meeting. We are short a quorum, so we're going to jump through the agenda. We're at six and a third, aren't we?
We need seven.
We need seven, so we're at six and a third.
Yeah, so we're short a little bit unless someone walks in. So anyway, we'll jump to down to item number five, questions and comment for management and board members. Are there any questions from anyone, their comments? Mr. Daines?
Yes, I appreciate your time. More than 3 minutes, but I appreciate that.
Okay, here we go. Thank you.
The general question I raised, I think the main one was about the LEP and Spanish.
Mr. Daines, could you hold your mic up a little?
To paraphrase it, was that applied to fixed transit, the large buses only, not paratransit? That still doesn't seem to make logic to me if that's the percent population that's in the valley or the area. Seems like it should apply to both. We'll leave it at that for now, though, and I'll be basically an observer today.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Daines. Okay, we'll jump down to item number six, meet district employees. That is Todd. Okay.
Now, wait a minute. You got to get up front.
Me?
I don't. Know. Todd. The employees do.
Well, all the rest of the employees get up front.
Do you really want me to get up there?
You can sit.
I will if you want me to. I just... So, we've asked, there's Norman, great. We've asked two of our employees to be here tonight. So the first person, and again, this is a reminder, this is something that the board chair has asked, that from time to time we bring some of the district staff here so you can get to know them, get to see what it is they do. So we've asked Spencer to be with us tonight, and Spencer is what we call one of our core dispatchers, meaning that's his main function is to dispatch. Dispatch is a hotbed. I'll let him explain what that is. But Spencer was also dispatch, running the buses and dealing with all that when we had our situation in Richmond with Kenneth, and we'll have Kenneth talk to us a little bit later. But so Spencer, comes to us from Parma, Idaho. He's going to have to explain that. I don't even know where Parma is, but he came down here, attended Utah State. He's been with us since 2012, just does a fantastic job. We really appreciate him. So, and he says if he could choose one food to eat, it would be steak, but you got to have some Dr. Pepper with that. So we'll let Spencer come and talk to you a little bit more, and you can ask him any questions.
Yeah, so like Todd was saying, I'm in our dispatch office, so I guess first to answer your question, Parma. It's about a half hour, 45 minutes west of Boise, right on the Idaho-Oregon border. It's a small farm town of about 2,000 people. So not a lot of people have heard of it, so that's not unusual, Todd. But so yeah, like you said, I work in the dispatch office, and a lot of it, we're kind of the communication hub, so the link between the public and the when they have comments, questions, concerns, the drivers, the shop, all the information is kind of going through us. So whether we have the answer, whether we have to find out the answer and get it. And then we deal a lot with the public comments, the scheduling for the paratransit services, things like that. Kind of as concerns arise, incidents, whatever it be, it comes through our office, and then we either handle it ourselves or direct it to where they need be. So, yeah, that's kind of what we do.
You have questions for Spencer? Question?
So if somebody asks, like, I'm sure you get all sorts of fun calls.
Yeah.
if if you get asked a more general question that like is supposed to be logged in and, you know, sent in like we'll do sometimes online, how do you usually take care of those? Do you like take a note or?
So we've got a form we fill out. So as I'm on the phone with them, a lot of times I just kind of jotting down notes for myself. And then whether it's a concern of driver behavior or policy or questions like that, and then we'll fill out the form with their information, that whether or not I want contacted, their name, phone number, forward it to the appropriate supervisor or whatever level of investigation or research, whatever should need to happen there.
Okay.
Thanks, Spencer. So dispatch really is the heartbeat of the organization, dispatch and maintenance. I mean, you got to have buses, you got to have drivers, right? Those are important things, and it all goes through dispatch, and so they do a great job. So the next employee we have is Nicole. Nicole's our human resource specialist, and she's been with us for about it'll be 2 years in October. So she comes to us, she's highly educated, and better than that, she's just highly intelligent, right? She's really good. She likes to paddleboard, she likes to snow ski. Just fantastic, and we really appreciate the perspective she brings. So,
if I could do HR outside every day, I would. I love to be outside. So, yeah, basically, I've just been with CBTD for just shy of 2 years. I do come from a background of politics. My bachelor's degree is in law and public policy, and then my master's degree is in human resources and business administration. So I spent some time down at the Senate. I used to work at the Utah Senate, and then I worked at Utah State for a couple years as a grant writer prior to coming here. So I'm a department of one, basically. I do pretty much everything related to HR and then some, but it is a fantastic organization, and I have never been happier to work somewhere than I have been at CBTD. So.
Any questions?
How many employees are there?
Well, we have 91 employees that include everybody except for the drivers. I'm sorry, except for the board members. Yes. But we're like a 120 with you guys, so close to that.
Some of us are only a third, so we're
I think that's all I count for, too, if we're there, so.
Where did you take your master's?
Utah State.
Huntsman?
Yes.
Any other questions?
That was nice. Thank you.
We
have a quorum now?
I missed you. So.
Okay. Okay. All right. We'll start back at the top then. We have a quorum. Do I have a motion for acceptance of the minutes?
So moved.
A second?
I second it.
Anyone need any discussion?
Yes. Even though I wasn't here, there was a line 112.
Okay.
On the meeting minutes, it says an item may be removed from the agenda or delayed with a movement by a board member. I think that means motion.
Okay.
Just, you know, small minor detail.
Okay.
That's the only change I have.
Okay, now. So what do we do? We go
so moved as amended.
With the change, amended. Okay, thank
Second.
You. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? No? Okay, thank you. Okay, approval, let's see. Approval of the agenda. Do I have someone make a motion for approval of the agenda?
I move that we approve the agenda.
Second?
Second.
Thank you, that was Glenn, Dean Quayle for a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. Okay, and our next meeting will be August 22nd. The board meeting would have landed right by the 24th, so we'll take July off. We'll move now to the presentation, and Todd, you're gonna do that?
Sure.
Okay.
So we've been fortunate enough that Kenneth Manola has agreed to be here, and glad that he's brought his family. So you all probably remember, but we'll just revisit that a little bit, that we had a driver that had a medical situation in Richmond and went unconscious at the wheel. And thankfully, we had a passenger, Kenneth, who was on the bus. And one of the things that impresses me about what Kenneth did, if you watch the video, Kenneth was concerned about the driver. And so he obviously, and I'll let him explain, but he, you know, went and showed concern. He said, "Hey, are you okay?" And when he recognized that the driver was not okay, and that things were in a perilous situation, he then was concerned about the passengers and the public and took control of the bus and was able to safely maneuver it for some time and then maneuver it to the side of the road. And quite honestly, that could have turned out really badly. We could have had a really horrific accident. And so we've asked Kenneth to come and be here and be recognized. Let us tell him how much we appreciate him and tell him thank you. And I have to apologize. I went and told Kenneth, someone in my neighborhood who happens to know Kenneth very well said that he likes hats. And so we made sure that we have a black hat and a blue hat for him. And I unfortunately left them on my desk. And so I will make sure that they get to Kenneth because we definitely appreciate that. But maybe we'll have Kenneth come up and talk a little bit for us, and if you have questions, and then Holly will present him with a certificate of our appreciation.
I don't know how much you guys want to know. It was an interesting experience. Normally those kinds of things I've only seen not happen on Hollywood, you know, in the movies, but I'll just give you kind of a snippet. When I was in the situation, I noticed I'm very attentive to details. I'm just very alert for the most part. I try to pay attention to things just because I like details. And I try to keep an eye on what's going on around me just to make sure that everything's okay. Both my parents, when I was growing up, were truck drivers. So I tend to know how commercial vehicles are, but I thought that this one would be pretty similar to what a car or a semi look like. But I've noticed that my father, that he used to have problems at the wheel. So I thought this would be a similar case, but when he started veering off into the left-hand lane, I thought maybe it was something that happened when my father had started to fall asleep at the wheel, so that's when I wanted to go check on him. Thought maybe he just maybe fallen asleep at the wheel, just was tired or something. But when he became unresponsive and he didn't say anything back, I knew something was wrong. And then when he started to have medical issues that I recognized, I was like, okay, there's something wrong here. And I thought maybe he'd come out of it, but he never responded or came out of it. And I was really worried when his hands came off the wheel and he fell back in his chair, like I said in the news report. And then I knew at that time that it was serious and that someone needed to take control of that wheel so that we didn't end up in a tragedy that could have eventually happened. I tried to make sure that everyone was okay. I kept checking on everything to make sure that we didn't get in a wreck, that we were safe for as long as we could. And so that while he was trying to recover from his incident, that everyone was safe, the passengers, the traffic. I was trying to figure out the best way, being as I didn't know what all the controls and switches on the bus did. You know, I was trying to figure out a way to alert people, but I didn't know how to do it. The only thing I figured was try to call 911. So I was trying to have some of the other passengers help me get hold of 911, see if they maybe could assist us and get us some help, because I didn't know what to do other than that, because I didn't know how the bus operated. And then when I was finally able to get the driver's foot off the wheel after about 3 attempts, then I was able to manage to get it over to the shoulder so that we could at least get us out of harm's way so that the other traffic could pass us so that we were no longer in danger. And I just wanted everyone to walk away safe from the incident. You know, I was really concerned for the driver after he came out of it, and I was hoping that he'd be okay, so I wanted to make sure that everyone was okay and that we just all walked away safely. So, I mean, I don't know what more I can do. I don't like to see anyone suffer for any reason. You know, I know that suffering is a necessary part of life, but, you know, just I wish that we didn't have to deal with it in extreme situations. So, if you have any questions for me, I'll be glad to answer them. But.
So did anyone come to help you try to remove him from the seat, or you were just pretty much
everyone just
on
pretty
your
much
own?
Came up, and I mean, I asked someone to call 911, and they called 911, but all the other passengers, pretty much they just kind of watched.
In their seats.
So.
You are truly a hero. That was amazing.
Thank you.
You saved many lives, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Okay. I think he deserves a round of applause. Yeah.
You taught him how to handle a commercial vehicle, and taught him to take action.
That's great.
I'll get with you on the house. I'll get him to you for sure.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you so much. Maybe more than two.
Okay.
Just real quick, and I just want to mention, so the driver is doing well. The driver's not back in service at this point, but just so you know, all of our drivers have to have a physical, a DOT, Department of Transportation physical, every 2 years minimum. Some of them have them every year. And again, that's just something that's required even to go back into service. So just thankfully, the drivers are regularly checked. But again, thank you for stepping in when we had this situation. It really was amazing what you did.
Okay. Let's see. Who's doing the presentation for
Curtis?
Oh, where is Curtis?
Curtis is back there.
Okay, Curtis, you're on. This is for the first quarter revenues and expenses.
Yeah, so I got thrown in this last minute. I'm kind of throwing this together. Hopefully I can explain a little bit about what's going on. First quarter is always the easiest because there's not a lot going on. Basically, when we're doing a quarterly deal like this, all I'm doing is looking for real significant anomalies where something's going over. Under expenditures at this point really don't worry me, unless I know there's a project that's supposed to be happening and hasn't. So even though I've added explanations for you for under variances, most of the time it's going to be, yeah, we know these expenditures are going to happen later in the year. We try to encourage people not to spend all of their budget right up front and kind of plan things out. So a lot of times the first quarter is pretty boring. Really the only significant one that draws attention, you see subscriptions and memberships. We have a number of membership dues that come up right in that first quarter. This one always spends in the first quarter really fast, and then the rest of the year is going to be really slow. So that one doesn't bother me at all. We almost always spend 50% of that budget line up front. The other one that is running just a little bit high, supplies for our vehicles. It's It's running just a little bit higher than normal. We're monitoring that. Maintenance department knows that it's running a little bit high, so they'll watch for other areas where they can compensate, but that tends to happen sometimes too in the winter months. As we come in January, February, and March, sometimes there's a little bit of supplies that are used up on those vehicles as they're in that winter season. So,
what's the difference between supplies and parts?
So supplies for the vehicles, that's going to be more of things that are used. The parts is actually replacing parts or a physical portion of the vehicle or putting, that'll be like brakes or if an alternator fails or something like that. So that we're putting belts in there. Supplies tend to be more like they'll use certain rags that are designed as a mechanic's going through and cleaning stuff. They're more... Actually, no, that's one of the other supplies. Supplies for vehicles.
Remind me. Also lubricants.
Lubricants, yeah. So we get some lubricants that are going on in there. It's supplies that are actually physically...
Lubricants, nuts and bolts.
Just little stuff. We break those out. A lot of it, there's some differences there that the FTA likes to see. We kind of track it, too. So not a huge difference. Just as a way of update on the capital outlay, so we have equipment purchases. We had a lot of contingent for computers because we've got some servers that they're past their useful life. We know that, but they're still running fine, so we're going to run them as long as we can. Nothing's failed yet, so that's a good sign. But the other one, we had that staff vehicle, and that was delivered in the second quarter. Got it ordered right now. I think we're supposed to take delivery before the end of the month. So that should pop up either this quarter, maybe first part of next one. Under real property, the bulk of that 65 is for the park and rides, for the bike park and rides, and we're still working with the cities on that project. That one's a slow go. Trying to make sure they have specific places where they want them, where they're not going to be moved. We're in a state of flux with that one. The other projects, they're scheduled for later in the summer, so nothing abnormal there. It's a pretty boring report. Completely like it. Questions?
I know earlier we discussed about having a more breakdown of meals. Do you have more breakdown, or could you email that to us than just meals?
Whatever the board wants. I thought the conclusion that last week was as fine as it was, but.
What did we decide on the breaking down of the meals?
We were going to get a quarterly report of detail.
Are we?
Yeah, that's what
we agreed. That's
what we agreed.
I think there was. I think we agreed that there were certain categories that we weren't going to provide the excruciating detail, but we were going to do it by category.
I'll shoot it out. You can do it as a supplement. So. So if I misunderstood, sorry.
That's fine. So what would the board like as far as a breakdown? What are your ideas for that on meals?
I thought we already went through this, so yeah. We need to go back and dig up the notes.
Yeah. Okay, we can look at the minutes.
Yeah, we decided.
Okay.
Okay. Week earlier.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll check into that.
We'll look at the minutes and
because I do remember we have gone over that.
Okay.
I remember what it was. Okay, is that it, Curtis? Okay. All right, Todd?
You have a resolution 2018-01. This is for the public trust investment fund. So this is a new requirement by the treasurer's office that the board adopt by resolution the folks that are authorized to add or subtract people from the account that manage the money in those. And again, so the public trust investment fund is where we put the fund balance. Much of the fund balance is there, drawing interest, and then we can pull money out of that to use as we're needing that operations, so that's what that is. So when we did our analysis, what we looked at is really the CFO and the CEO are the two positions that make sense for doing that. And then again, we may have some staff folks that their job responsibility is to look at that and use that, and so we may add them. But that's really what this is. Unless there's anyone that has questions that need more information.
No questions? Should we make an adoption to adopt the motion to adopt the resolution?
I will motion we adopt resolution 2018-1.
Thank you, Patrick. And do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thanks, Ron. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I forgot to open it up for discussion. Any discussion?
I actually do have a question on this one. Sorry.
I was slow. I'm green at this.
So on this one, I understand, and Chris, help me on this one, that the treasurer's office of the county or the agency that sponsors, whatever would be the lead agency, is supposed to have a signature in the in code. It's the treasurer's, the actual county treasurer has to also be on this account. Is that not correct? I'm asking for personal reasons,
yeah,
too. But
no, that only applies to health departments.
Okay.
Sorry, you're under the gun.
You need more signatures.
I knew that question was going to come up, and I can quote it to you. Yeah, there are certain entities where the treasurer has to be able to authorize changes to the PTIF, and the health department's one of those. We are not.
Okay,
I'm
done.
Thank you, Lord. Okay. All right, service expansion, Todd.
All right, Jillian, if you'll fire up the gizmo. So in your packet, you have a sheet that's got blue coloring on it. So what we, if you recall, while we're letting that warm up, if you recall, a few months ago we came in and talked with you about service expansion ideas, and we presented an overview of that. You asked us to come back with a little bit more detail. So what we wanted to do is to come back and talk to you about that. We actually pulled together a small group of board members, and we appreciate their help, and started going through this and trying to understand how much detail to give you. I'm sorry, what? We can put up Route 4, it's fine. That's fine. But so one of the things we realized is that we have a multi-year plan that we're going to present to you, but some of this is based on timing of trying to get things done for the public. And so we recognize, as we met with that committee, that it's going to take time to give you the information probably that you want. So really, all we're presenting to you is the fall of 2018, so the fall of this year plan. So we'll start with the top thing, the Route 4 peak. We're wanting to add 6 additional service hours. So currently, we have Route 4, which if you look up on the map here, it goes up 5th North and turns where the roundabout's going in now up on 6th East, and then heads along 6th East, north along 6th East, turns right on 10th North, and then goes up to the university. So currently, we operate a peak service. So what this does, we have Route 4, and then we have a peak route that runs for about 4 hours at the same time that Route 4. So essentially what you're doing is taking this service that's every 30 minutes and making it 15-minute service. Now, there's a couple reasons why we do that. One is that we found when we did that, it actually increased ridership, right? So it grew ridership a little bit. But the other reason is it actually spreads ridership out. So when we talk to folks that use this service a lot, one of the things that we're hearing from the younger crowd is, not only do I want a GPS app that tells me where the bus is, but I want that app to tell me whether or not the bus is full. And what we're hearing is they've had that experience where they may get on the bus, but they're one of the 65 other sardines crammed on there, and that's not a fun experience. So for some folks, they may do that once or twice, and then they may say, I'm going to quit riding. That's not a good experience. So when we have this 15-minute service, it spreads that ridership out. And then it also increases it because now it's more convenient. Now I'm not waiting 30 minutes, it's every 15 minutes. And so what we're proposing is that we increase the number of hours. We add an additional 6 hours a day during school time. So this is during when USU is in session. to operate along there. The other thing about this is we understand some demand that's coming. So on 10th North and 6th East, you've probably heard of the Millennial Apartments. Almost 1,000 beds that have gone in there. And again, we think there's some good land use planning that's been done that benefits transit. They did not sell or create one parking spot for every tenant. So there's actually less parking spots than there are tenants. So not everyone can have access to a car. Well, those folks are typically going to go to transit. That's what we're going to see. So that's the first set of that proposal. Questions about that we can answer.
Does USU have one that runs by this one or similar? Is this competing with USU's routes?
It doesn't. So one of the things that we try to do, I meet monthly with the USU folks that run the Aggie Shuttle, and we try to coordinate as best we can but not compete. So they have services in the area along 8th East and at the stadium parking lot. So they're service close, but not exactly right there. But again, one of those things is, and this is that balancing act, right, is convenience. Convenience is a big thing. And so for some folks, walking up that hill is inconvenient. For some folks, walking three blocks to get to the bus stop is inconvenient. And so, again, we see the demand. We anticipate that this is gonna grow ridership, and it's also gonna spread that ridership out. Great question.
So, and then I'm sure the buses have room for bikes on these, because you probably get a lot of bikes, especially.
Yeah. So another great question, and another thing we see, Norm, you're exactly right. We see a lot of bikes that will ride up the hill. So we get a lot of bikes on these routes from the transit center or along the way, and then they'll ride their bike down the hill. So every bus that we have that's out there that's fixed route, so this isn't for the paratransit buses that are going in and out, but the ones that are on fixed routes like this, they have a place for three bikes on the bike racks. Any other questions on that? Okay, so the next thing is the same route is that we would add it on Saturdays. Currently, we don't do that. And so what we have is this route and Route 1, they serve the university, but just differently. On weekdays, because this route is operating, Route 1 takes a little different route than it does on Saturdays. On Saturdays, Route 1 currently is only running, and so it takes a much longer route. It covers this Route 4 area and then goes and covers the Route 1 area. And so the problem that we've run into the last year or so is that it just can't make the transfers. It's just because of traffic congestion increasing and the distance that it goes, it's not making transfers on Saturdays. And so that becomes into that reliability issue. And even though we're still well within the targets that you've set from a reliability standpoint, it doesn't take long for someone that's choosing to ride the bus to miss their transfers before they say, you know what, it's just not reliable enough for me. I'm not going to ride any longer. It's kind of like if you went out and, you know, every time you went to start your car, it was a 50-50 chance that it was going to start. It wouldn't take you long that you're going to address that issue, whatever it is. If it's a battery, if it's a starter, whatever, you're going to get it in the shop and get it fixed. It's the same thing for folks that are on the bus. They're looking for that reliability. So this would add Route 4 on Saturdays. So again, on your sheet, you can see the Route 4 during the weekdays, about a $38,000 add. The Route 4 on the Saturdays, about a $16,500 add. So that's what we're proposing there. Questions on that?
So, Todd, are you going to eliminate Route 1 or keep Route 1 going?
So, no, Route 1 will still stay in place. It will just run the shortened version like it does during the weekday. So it will shorten it up so that it can make transfers. It will become reliable. Yeah. Great questions.
So is three bikes enough on that? Or would you need more bikes?
Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But three is all we can do. We can't do more.
This is the biggest rack they have.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you, there's all sorts of things we've looked at, you know, but the bike rack is, that's the maximum that the law will allow. Okay, questions? Okay, so the next one down is Route 6. So Route 6 serves the southwest part of Logan. And you know, this is a good community route. So this route's got good ridership, but this is also one of our longest routes. Nowhere we can move it. Really, nowhere we can move it, because everywhere it's serving, there's ridership. And that's what's really hard. When you're looking to change a route up, you're like, okay, let's pull some stops maybe. Let's maybe, you know, change the direction or change an area. And you're looking for areas where there's not ridership. This route is highly used, and there's a lot of ridership. And so it's really not an option for us, but it's having a real hard time making transfers during peak times of the day. So again, there's really kind of two things that affect our timeliness. It's the traffic congestion, which has gone up substantially, and then it's the passenger load. And so the passenger load, it can be that they're just wanting off at every stop, and we have a lot of this on Route 6. Every single stop, somebody wants off. That really slows the route down. So what we're actually proposing is maybe a little counterintuitive, but what we're actually proposing is to make this route a 45-minute route and actually add another part of the community on, because there's a lower-income community out here west of 6th West. 10th West. West of 10th West. Thank you, Jillian. West of 10th West. Thank you, Jillian. West of 10th West that we can serve, that probably really would benefit from transit, and probably we would see some utilization there. And what we would do is we would actually extend out there and then make this route a 45-minute route. And that's the one thing that we're going to struggle with as we go forward is these routes have been 30-minute routes since the time I began back in 93, right? And we haven't adjusted that. Traffic has changed dramatically since 93. How we've done it this long is amazing to me. But as these communities start to expand, we think it makes sense to start serving those areas a little bit more. And so again, in one sense, we're lessening the service level because we're going from 30 minutes to 45. But in another sense, we're enhancing the service level because we're now serving another part of the community. So again, we think this is probably the right approach. And as we get into other years of suggestions, then it will make more sense as we look at some express routes and things like that. But this is our recommendation on this route for this coming fall.
So what Pitt Transit for, because that Pitt Transit for, because that will be right in the middle of everybody
else. So there's another, that's a great question, Cecilia. So you're exactly right. So currently we have the regional routes, what we used to call the county routes, but the regional routes that go from Hiram up to Richmond, those routes, they come in and, excuse me, folks wait 15 minutes because they're coming in. Now, there's purpose behind that too, right? As we grow the system, our transit center has been expanded all we can, and so there are times where we're almost literally full with buses, and so we need to start figuring out how do we bring routes in at off times, and it does. It's a little bit more of an inconvenience for folks because now they've got to wait, which is why we built the transit center. They have air conditioning, and they have Wi-Fi and things like that, so that they can still have convenience. They're shopping right next door for food, things like that. But you're right, they are going to have to wait 15 minutes.
But it frees up space, so
it
that
does.
Helps. Okay.
So it's, again, always we're balancing all of these multiple factors. Yeah, great question. Other questions? Okay, again, there may be some very minimal charges there for some increased mileage and stuff, but we're already operating those hours, so we're not changing the hours. And the real cost is, you know, the time of the driver and things like that. So this is already being operated currently. That's why we don't really have a projection for cost there. The last one is, oh, I'm sorry, there's two more. This other one is Route 12. So Route 12 serves from Logan to Hiram. And this is a very minor modification. So that currently, I'm going to let Jillian speak to this because I might really mess it up. Jillian, go for it.
Okay, so currently this route comes off of the highway and does this large loop in Hiram and services Mountain Crest and a couple of the other schools in the area. And then when it comes back to the highway, it comes back to the senior center and does a loop to pick up at the park and ride. So our recommendation on the modification in order to make sure that we're able to make our transfers is to remove that secondary trip to the senior center and that loop at that location. We feel that two to three minutes that it's taking to make that loop will help our reliability on that route. So instead of doing this loop, we would just turn back onto the highway after servicing Blacksmith Fork.
So we've already stopped there once. We're just not stopping there again. And the thing that's interesting about routes, they're living, breathing things. And I'm convinced that they actually function with the theory of compounding. So what seems like, well, that's 2 minutes, not that big a deal. During certain times of the day, that two-minute delay could end up to be a seven-minute delay. It's just kind of how you hit lights differently or you hit traffic differently. It really can impact things dramatically. So yeah, again, we're still servicing the area. We're still serving. We're just not hitting that again. Minor tweak. Yeah, Sean.
Do you foresee putting a stop right on that corner before they turn right, so that if people still want to, as a last stop before heading?
Where is that stop?
Have that as a last stop before heading.
Where is that stop, Jillian? That next stop.
We do currently have a stop right here before the light, and then the next one is down here by 8th East. Now I had heard that they're putting in some more buildings down here.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if we end up having to do that, there's no parking at either of those two stops.
That's correct. There is no parking existing.
Yeah, we'll look at that, Sean. I mean, I definitely think that's a good suggestion. We'll look at that. And if there's a safe place that we can do that.
They're going to build something there soon. Maybe when that happens, there might be an option for parking.
For sure. No, that's a great thing for us to look at. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Great. Okay, and then the last thing is the Route 16. So Route 16 is the route that comes from Preston, Idaho. And is kind of like an express down the highway. It serves Lewiston and then comes in to the transit center. And currently, when it comes into the transit center, it goes out of service. Well, it leaves the transit center and then goes down to our offices and then goes out of service there. But a good majority of those folks that are riding that route actually are going to the university. The bus and transfer to another bus. Off the bus and transfer to another bus. We're proposing that we just take that route and extend it up to the university. The other thing that does is it gives us, again, one more route, two times in the morning and two times in the afternoon that we're servicing the university. So it gives people another option to get to and from the university. But for many of these passengers on this route, it gives what we call a one-seat ride. They're not having to transfer. They just get to go. And so it's a minimal cost. You see, it's about $18,000, but it adds a lot of convenience for folks, and again, it gives us another route servicing the university.
So will it stop at the transit and pick up more passengers?
Yeah, so that would be part of the benefit, right, is that it'll stop at the transit just quickly, load folks on there that may be going up to the university, and then drop them off. And then in the afternoon, it will start at the university. You can load people up, stop the transit center, people can get off, or they can stay on, and then it can take off. Yeah, go ahead, Jillian.
So on this one, from our main offices, the way that this is proposed is it would go from our main offices to campus and then down to the transit center and then into Preston. On the way back, it would come from Preston to the transit center, drop off those people that don't need to go to the university and pick up any additionals and then go through the campus and then back to our main offices.
So will it go out of service once it hits the campus then? Or will it
we do still have bus stops at our main offices, so it is in service from the time it leaves our main offices until it gets back.
And we actually do have people that ride down and get off on and off at our office. In fact, on my way to the meeting tonight, one of our regular passengers was at our offices catching the bus. So, yeah.
Will this be on, how do I say this the right way? Will this now merge with the new Route 6 and Route 11, those that are currently 45-minuters? Will this be an option to get up to the university for those?
I'm not that familiar with the schedule, Jillian. I'm trying to think.
We come in. I would have to look at the schedule to determine that. I'm
pretty sure, because I ride that bus quite regularly. I usually get to the office either at 7 or 8 with that bus, so it's going to add a little bit of time, but I think it'll be there just a little bit before those routes come in, but we'll have to look at that. So you can see, in all, this is about $72,000, $75,000. Again, one of the reasons we're proposing this in the fall is that we don't have to move bus stops, really. We can use existing buses, so we don't have to order buses. So this is really stuff that we can do fairly simply with existing services. And so I think that makes it you know, easy for us to do. Some of the other things we're proposing over the next year or so take a lot more effort. So when we start moving bus stops around or designing a new route, you know, there's a lot of things we have to go through, permitting and blue stakes and stuff that just takes a lot more time than what we could do. And it takes us some time to develop the shifts for this and get them out. So that's something actually Jillian's working on right now for this fall. When school starts in August, she's already working on the shift schedule and stuff for these routes. And so that's why we're coming to you now. And really what we're looking for is that you would we may come back at some point. We'll have to see. We may come back and say, hey, we need to do a budget amendment because of these additions. We'll wait and see how that budget process goes. But what we're asking for tonight is that you would actually, if you're supportive of this direction, that you would actually adopt make a motion to adopt that you're supportive of us continuing this direction and actually looking to implement this fall.
Okay. I will make that motion.
I'll second it.
Do I have any?
Do I have to say what motion I'm making, or can I just agree with what you just said?
If it's clear enough for the board, then
yeah,
it's
I'm clear. Go. Okay.
I think we're good. Any discussion at this point?
It's very well thought out.
It is. I went to their meeting, and it was very thought out.
A lot of good work
to make
gone
it smooth,
into it.
And there's a lot of time put into doing this. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Okay, general
or
managers.
Do you want to ask if anyone's against?
Oh, anybody against this?
Okay.
I'll get this.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
Not me.
Craig. Okay.
I'm up.
All right.
So
you're on.
We have a couple of sections of policy to review today. Before we jump into that, I just wanted to check in with everyone. Does anybody have any general questions about our process for doing this? Any concerns? We've got our new method of running through all of them and then having a single motion. I think we'll have two motions tonight, one for 2.3 and one for 2.4. No questions? All right. So, policy 2.3 covers compensation and benefits. I think there were a lot of questions about this section simply because we don't have the documents that we need. But I suspect most of us have seen the employee handbook or can get a copy if you need it. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. And I guess one point I did want to make with regard to this, since we're going to be going through this, it does put more responsibility on us as board members to be prepared with questions and concerns, things that you brought up while you were doing the survey. So if you'll make sure you're prepared for these so that we can be thorough as we discuss. If need be, otherwise we won't waste our time. So with that, let's get into 2.3. Section is suggests that the CEO will not cause or allow jeopardy to the agency's effectiveness, fiscal integrity, and public image. Any comments or questions on that first section?
Is this 2.4 or 2.3?
2.3.
So are you going to move the whole thing?
Yeah, we'll go through all of the subsections of 2.3, and thank you. And then if there's any questions or comments, we'll discuss. Otherwise, we'll just have a single motion for 2.3, then we'll move on to 2.4 and do the same thing again. Okay, so with no discussion on that, 2.3.1 will not fail to operate without a compensation and benefits program that attracts and retains highly qualified employees. And we just made a minor change to the word district. Okay. 2.3.2 shall not establish current compensation and benefits that deviate from the board established compensation policy as described in Appendix C. None, the CEO shall not change the CEO's own compensation and benefits. Seems pretty straightforward. CO will not operate without a robust, impartial, and transparent process for administering employee compensation.
That
minor change there.
Yeah, with 2.3.4, that requires a change in the policy manual. So after we move, however we do the interpretation, we need to move to change the policy manual.
And then 2.3.5, should not establish or change retirement benefits and compensations must cause him unpredictable or inequitable situations, including those that incur unfunded obligations, provide less than some basic level of benefits to all full-time employees, and treat the CEO differently from other senior level officers.
On that one, I feel that all the employees should have the same package. I think they're pay should be the difference. So obviously the higher the position, the higher the pay, but I think their packages should be the same with all full-time employees.
Sure. Okay. Other comments or questions about that? The PEP committee discussed this a little bit. I felt like it is a fairly common practice to have different levels of benefit packages depending on as part of the compensation, depending on what kinds of employees you're trying to attract and retain. Any other comments or concerns on that issue?
It kind of concerns me. I'd like to see that change so it says treat the CEO differently from all other full-time employees. So I've checked with Logan City, the county, Utah State, and everybody there, they get the same retirement. They get the same federal holidays where with CBTD, the management gets, another 11.5% over what the regular employee gets. On federal holidays, they get almost, the employees get about half of what the regular people get. And then when it comes to days off, like say Utah State, if you're an exempt employee, you start out with your full 22 days, where if you're non-exempt, you start out with 12 days, but then you work up, and then at 10 years, you'll reach the maximum. So everybody gets 22 days, where with CBTD, their employees, the management gets 30 days, where after the bus drivers the dispatchers and other employees, it takes them 10 years, but then they only work up to 15 days. They don't get up to 30 days. And so it kind of concerns me a little bit because that can create some.
I think with wherever you work, there's going to be different benefit packages. I worked at a national lab,
Well,
when I started off, I got 3 weeks vacation, for example. But then after 5 years, I got 4 weeks vacation or 3 weeks vacation. Start off with two, get four, and then by the time I hit 20 years, that's when I got 4 weeks vacation.
Yeah.
So benefits can grow over time. The longer you stay, the better your benefits in some cases. I think that what I've seen of CBTD, I think the benefits, it's a sound system. I remember years ago complaining about my benefits and somebody said, "Then find a new job."
Well, yeah, and we wouldn't want to say that because the purpose of benefits is to hire and retain quality employees. So, but I like I said, I was just comparing it with the other government agencies around, and I haven't found one yet that has a separation. Except, like I said, on your PTO, your paid time off. But eventually, when they've been there long enough, then everybody, like I say, at Logan City, same way, Utah State, same way. Then they eventually, after so many years of service, they all have the same number of vacation days. They still don't have a big separation. So that's what's caused me concern. If I saw like Logan City doing different or Utah State, then I thought, well, maybe that is an exception. But I haven't found any yet. Not that there isn't. I could be wrong. But
don't you think, though, the difference comes between exempt and non-exempt?
So, yeah, that affects the PTO.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, if you come in.
So, couldn't we view that same kind of a thing here, senior officers versus non senior level employees, similar to exempt, non-exempt.
So, and we do that, they do that already. That's put in there. So like if you get hired on as an exempt employee for CBTD, you get your 30 days right off. Where if you're non-exempt, you'll start off at, I can't remember what it is, but then once you reach the maximum, the most days you can have is 15. You never get up to the 30, no matter how long you've been.
Well,
where.
That's just benefits.
See, where,
you know, when I was an hourly paid employee, I got paid by the hour. I got certain benefits as an hourly
right.
paid employee.
Yeah.
But once I jumped to a salaried employee, non-exempt employee, if that's the right term, all of a sudden now I was basically paid for 40 hours. You know, but then again, I also would get a call in the middle of the night saying, oh, by the way, we have an issue, and since you're senior management, quote unquote, we want you here. And so, and if I did that as an hourly employee, the minute you hang up, you're on the clock. I'm not.
So when we did the compensation study, I was under the impression, they were under the impression that all the benefits was the same. And so when they did the study, it was all of them being the same. It's not till later that I found out they're separate.
Are you talking about the compensation policy that
No, the study when they did the wages. That was it 2 years ago, a year and a half ago? I asked that specifically, and they says no, they're all the same. That's why I keep bringing this up, because I was in the impression it was the same.
Okay, so the compensation policy that's in the policy manual, that's the one you're talking about?
No, this is the study when they came to evaluate how their wages were.
Have we done ones in the last 3 years? Because I don't remember that. Not since I've been on the board.
I'll bring my notes, but I did do that. But I asked that question specifically.
I have a question. I actually, Todd already knows what I'm going to say. I already mentioned that I had a question. I think one of the responsibilities we have as board members is to protect the organization the best that we can. I am a little concerned that when I look at it, I may not understand it as well as I ought to, that it's not just longevity that's being addressed here. You know, whether you're here longer, that you get more, but there is different classifications of employees who then get additional benefits. I think that there is some concern about, I think if you have full-time employees that go across the board, they're all committed, that full-time benefit package should be structured according to their compensation. But how you structure it, the formula should be applied evenly. Just an opinion. But it does seem to me that would be prudent in protecting the organization, because I think we are up for some criticism if we do change how we apply benefits and maybe in stages and when we get to a certain point. I'd like to see those that are full-time, committed, working hard, but maybe don't make as much money, at least percentage-wise, have the opportunity for the same benefit package. That's just an opinion.
So, Lloyd, I think Lloyd made a good point there, because I've showed this to a number of people, and they expressed some real concerns of why there's a big difference in the benefits. So that is something to take into consideration also.
And I don't know if I'm interpreting it correctly, so you'll have to help me make sure I'm not misunderstanding.
I think another consideration when a non-exempt, as to use Eric's terminology, employee comes to the end of the day, he's through with his work. The salaried employees are not off the clock. A late phone call or an early phone call, whenever, they put in whatever number of hours that it takes to do the job, and that's what their compensation allows for, and I think we have to consider that.
So if their vacation days or paid off days are not used, is it cashed out, or do they lose it?
Only if they leave the organization. I mean, it's not something they can cash in, you know.
So do they roll over?
There's a policy for that. There's a maximum that you can allow, and then after that you lose them if you're not using them.
So if you don't use any of the 30 days the 1 year, then you have 60 days the next year?
Yeah, if you didn't use any vacation day. Again, part of this policy is encouraging people to take time off too, right? Because if you're not taking time off, you're going to create stress for yourself. But I think these are points that we are open to consideration.
But they're not a cashed out then. So at the end of the year, if you don't use 30, you don't get a check for those 30 days?
No. Okay.
Is it your HR director that handles the compensation packages?
Well, so it's our executive team. We kind of
the whole team does.
Yeah, but again, we seek outside consulting where appropriate, you know.
Yeah, what percentage of or how many employees are exempt versus those that are not exempt?
There's 5 employees that are exempt.
Okay.
So I don't know that we can solve this. If there's questions about benefits, maybe we need to come up with another way to get those gathered and reviewed, given the time we have. Unless you guys want to continue.
You know, I'm just curious, and I don't want to belabor this. So is the separation just, the only separation on those areas, is it just between exempt versus non-exempt?
Yeah. Well, it is.
I thought I saw more than just the 2 levels.
Well, no, there is a little bit on the pay time off. There is a little bit of separation.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, so on the retirement, it's just the separation between exempt and non-exempt. On the health benefits, it's the same. On the paid time off, there are 3 different classifications. There's the front line, and then there's the kind of mid-level staff folks that have a little bit better paid time off. We're open to looking at that. I do think, given the current policy, I think it's your policy.
And the question I have is with this board governance, where does the board sit as far as dictating to the chief executive officer how he handles his employees versus...
It sounds to me like there's enough question here that perhaps, I don't know, maybe we can talk with Roger on this. Maybe a small working group needs to come up with a few more details and summary to get out to board members, work with you, Todd, and your team. See if we can get some more information pulled together and give everybody a chance to review that in more detail. And with the goal of looking at the policy here and seeing if there's some change that needs to be made, I get the impression that, Norman, you're looking at
just 3-2-5.
Right, rather than have it... the CEO treated differently from other senior level officers, but all full-time employees, I think, is something you're recommending. I don't know that, you know, given my level of understanding the details, I'm not sure if that's appropriate or not. But maybe the small working group could be tasked with getting us the information we needed to see if that's an option for us. Because I think you're right, Lloyd, this is definitely something
I'm really thinking of how are we visualized and how can we best protect the agency so that we're doing the very best we can to serve the public that we're serving and so forth. I think that's the and I recognize. I mean, the point was made. You have people who are exempt. Hopefully, they're the folks that are probably not working 40 hours. They're probably putting in 50 or 60 hours, whatever it takes. And I also know that you get calls all the time. I know that kind of thing firsthand. So
sure.
I think that there is something unique to those kinds of responsibilities. I just wonder, is the compensation the way to, we know that they're higher given their salaries and so forth, doesn't that already elevate their other benefit packages rather than doing something separate? Or could we somehow let these other folks have the same kind of benefit package
my question is this. Is it the policy that you're disagreeing with, or is it the interpretation? Which one is it?
That's a good question.
Because we're mainly talking implementation. We're saying, well, I don't like this, and I don't like that, and I think we ought to do this. Is it the policy that we're not happy with, or is it the interpretation? No. Those that were there on March 22nd of 2017, approved the policy and accepted what was written. Okay, now we're here to look at the interpretation. Is the interpretation is what we're looking at?
I'd say your interpretation is exactly correct.
However, the point of doing this is also an opportunity for us to look at tweaking our policies. And when we find something that we disagree with, or
which
that we have concerns about, it sounds like there's enough concern here that we need to look
at. I totally agree with what you're saying, and I was not privy to those kinds of conversations, so I'm late to the party.
Well, that's fine.
I apologize.
But I do think it's important, though. You're not late to the party. This is a living document. I mean, at any time, you can change it, right? And so, if it's a policy-level thing, that's your thing. If it's an interpretation, then you say we disagree and have me come back with a different interpretation. So I think it's totally within your right to talk about it.
I'm going to be the first one to say that if that's been vetted through, I'm going to support and trust that that's how it's been done. And I agree with you. In fact, I had that question on some of our other discussions. Why are we discussing these things when we're really just looking at the interpretation?
Craig, we've looked at a whole lot of wage and salary surveys. We know about what the range we'd be within to find replacements for these five exempt employees. And we're not out of line with either compensation for benefits or salary. So we held back on bonuses for at least 2 years. We've taken some steps. I'm not sure. I think we've beaten it to death.
But in defense, this is the first time we have discussed the compensation on the retirement plan and the other one. This is the first time that I've seen it since I've been on here. So this is the first
time we've ever.
This is the first time
benefits.
We've discussed it. And when we did the compensation study, I brought it up, and I was told that they were all the same. So my argument to that is that.
When you say all the same, Norm, what are you talking about? All the same. So in my mind, I just want a point of clarification here. So senior level officers are the exempt employees. So we all know there's a huge difference between exempt and non-exempt employees in every organization. Things happen differently. You just told us right now that the insurance is basically the same for everybody. Is that what you said? Which ones were the same again?
Yeah. The insurance is the same.
So everybody's the same on insurance, so we're all good with that.
The paid time off, there are three classifications.
So paid time off is by classification. I think that's acceptable for an organization.
And then the retirement, the exempt employees do have an additional retirement.
So again, exempt. Gets a little bit different there.
And federal holidays.
Yeah, Eric's right, and the holidays.
And again, exempt employees in my arena have the same kind of things. If you're exempt, you have a little bit different thing, even in schooling, than you do if you're non-exempt. So the only part that everybody seems to be bugged about is treat the CEO differently from other senior level officers. Is that right? So if you, in your mind, we do that, or if we clarify it to exempt versus non-exempt, other exempt employees, does that take care of the issue?
That's not what I'm hearing from the conversation. But from what I'm hearing from the conversation, there's concern about those differences in those three classifications.
I would honestly, guys, I would welcome us having a work group. I think Lloyd, Eric, Norm, they've raised questions.
I'm
just saying, I'm open to having the discussion. If there's causing concern, and I think Lloyd brings up a great point. If it's causing concern outside the organization or putting us in a bad light, I think it's worth discussing. And again, I am going to say to you, though, you challenge me to hire and retain good people. So I'm just saying, if we start monkeying with that, and I'm okay with that, what are we going to do to take care of those people so that they don't go backwards? Because we have gone backwards. Roger's correct. We've gone backwards. I'm just shooting you straight. We have gone backwards in compensation, and we've held compensation. And again, I have no problem. This is your responsibility to vet this. I just want to make sure that we're vetting it honestly and we're going to have a discussion. I welcome the discussion because I think it will hopefully educate all of this. And at the end of the day, you guys have to be comfortable, and we want to support you in being comfortable. So welcome that.
So backwards on compensation, is that just the bonuses? Or what has gone backwards?
We've held salaries for the executive group a number of years. I mean, they have been held in place. We have done some adjustments over time, but there's been times where we've held for 3-4 years sometimes.
So
Anyone care to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion that the interpretation is correct. What was the policy?
2.3. Yeah, that's the last 2.3. So 2.3.
I second that.
All right.
Can I just ask for a roll call vote on this one?
So just to clarify, Lloyd, so we're saying we're accepting the interpretation, yeah, but then we can make another motion to further discuss
examine
the benefits?
The
is that what we want to do?
Yeah, and I don't know whether that fits on this agenda, but I've sensed that that was something that could be...
So we can accept the interpretation?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think there's some confusion, because if you accept the motion on 2.3 and the interpretation thereof, you're not. That's the conversation.
Yeah.
If you table it for further discussion, that's a totally different route.
Okay.
What if
you accept
instead
it, you're done.
Vote, or what if we make a motion instead on having talking about the policy more, and then after that vote is over, then we decide whether or not we want to either table the interpretation or accept it.
I like that. Anybody have any concerns with that approach?
Can you say that again?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
I was just saying, why don't we first vote on whether or not we want to have a little committee and talk about tweaking the policy, and then based on how that vote comes out, then we decide whether to vote about whether accepting the minutes or tabling the minutes, or sorry, accepting the interpretation or tabling interpretation for another day.
That sounds, yeah.
Did that make more sense or less sense the second time I said
that? So you're making a motion to form a committee to re-look at
that policy?
Yeah.
Can I ask some clarification real quick before you make that vote? Seems to me the concern is the benefits. The benefits that are separate from the other full-time people, right? Look, some of the exempt folks have had their salaries in check for a little bit. I'm looking forward to actually, we're doing market analysis right now. We're going to be talking to you in the general manager report about something we're doing with market analysis, but I'm fine having the discussion on the benefits, but if we're compensating them within the market, I do want the authority to move forward and adjust people's compensation if it's possible. That's one thing I've been waiting for. So I just would ask you to consider that. You don't have to do that. I'm just asking you to consider that we table for the benefits, but if the market survey comes back, and there's folks that need to be adjusted in the market, that I have the authority to move forward with that. That's just my request.
Sorry, I don't know what to ask. So I think we are moving forward. If we vote, we move forward. That doesn't prevent us from having a future discussion, and I think that's your point, right? And so I think rather than disrupt a system that's been vetted for quite a while, that was the reason for making the motion, saying let's make the motion, the interpretation is correct. But it doesn't mean that you said yourself, Todd, that this is a fluid kind of thing. So I think that it's okay to come back and reevaluate and so forth. And I don't necessarily, just one comment, I don't necessarily want to go after those that are the highest compensated or that we attract the highest talent that we can. I'm not arguing that. But I'd like to see if we can retain it at all levels of the organization, and can we do something to make them all somewhat equivalent? Yeah. We don't have to just bring the bar down. We can say, what can we do? I don't know. I have no idea because I haven't been a part of that.
With the next wage and salary data that we get, let's.
Well, we're going to talk.
We get benefit data along with it.
We're going to talk to you in the general manager's report about other parts of the organization, and you're right on.
I think Lloyd. You have a motion in a second, but I don't think we can. Yeah. I think it's correct. It's all the interpretation.
The interpretation is correct.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that saying we're okay with the interpretation precludes us having that other conversation now and making a motion to form a work group.
I would just like a roll call on the vote.
Which motion are you going
to? Well, so he wants a roll call.
His motion.
There's only one motion on the table.
Yeah.
It's just to accept all 2.3. But you want a roll call vote, why?
Just
This has been just a hot topic. A lot of people worry about wages and stuff. They just want to see where everybody stands.
It's always going to be a hot topic. It's always going to be a war. Nobody's going to feel like it's fair.
Yeah. Even after we vote on it or whatever, a year from now when the board makeup changes a little more, we're still going to be discussing it. But I think you're right. Okay. It's always going to be a hot topic.
Oh, yes.
I guess
you called for a question.
As far as a roll call vote, I don't know how the rules work on that. So I don't know if that's required.
Everybody votes individually, and you let sure. Charisse, you're going to take the.
You'll always vote who doesn't vote.
So what are we voting on?
Okay, so the motion.
It also states who's present, though. I mean, you just state your name and yes or no is all. If it's too much, I can withdraw it.
The question is, if there's concerns about the wages and compensation, and we want to discuss those concerns, when are we going to discuss those if we move forward and take a vote and accept this? So that's the question. Because I agree with what you're saying. I think that that benefits are a concern for everyone that's working for this organization. And if we as a board feel like there's a concern there that needs to be addressed, then when are we going to address it if we pass and take a vote right now?
Apparently, though, historically, this board has already done. I stand corrected because I think
we established the policy.
We've done some of that.
Yeah, we've established the policy.
Yeah, the policy's been put in place.
The policy's in place, and now what we're looking at is we're vetting the general manager's interpretation of that policy.
And I'm okay with I still stand by my motion. But I think then afterwards, and it doesn't have to be today. It could be maybe after this. This is for a budget cycle we're trying to do this for, right? Or not? I don't know.
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, it's just an ongoing.
Okay. So let me just finish. So I think afterwards, I think we can ask that this come back for another discussion for the future. But I think right now, I'm going to trust that they've already vetted this all out and that I'm just going to vote on the interpretation of the policy.
And that's the motion before the board.
Yes.
Okay. So I think we're, unless there's any other urgent conversations, let's go ahead and have a vote on the motion that's been presented and seconded. We'll start down here with Eric.
I'll abstain.
Yes.
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 No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Sorry, sock me around.
Did you capture that, Charisse?
I counted six. Is that right? Or, what's that?
So six.
It's passed. Okay.
It passed.
All right. Passed.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to 2.4, which is financial planning and budgeting. So, Section 2.4.1 we are recommending that we remove that based on Todd's interpretation. He's referring the board to the financial condition and activities, which is Section 2.5, which we'll be looking at down the road. So the PEP committee looked this over and after reviewing that decided we were recommending that we strike that section and defer to section 2.5 later on.
So we're recommending that we remove 2.4.1 policy completely from 2.4.
Because it's redundant with 2.5.
It's redundant with 2.5.
So unless anybody has any questions or concerns about that, we'll move on to the next one. Okay. So, CEO shall not allow is to omit credible projection of revenues and expenses, separation of capital and operational items, cash flow, and disclosure of planning assumptions. Questions or concerns there? Okay, then 2.4.2, not allow anything that is unclear about long-term funding needs and growth projections. Will not allow inefficiency due to over or underfunding. 2.4.4 does not cause deficit spending. Or 2.4.5 does not provide for adequate reserves. This one was pretty straightforward in the voting survey. Any questions or concerns with this one? All right, can I have a motion? And Sue, do you want to?
Sure, I move that we accept the interpretation of policy 2.4.
You need a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All right, all those in favor? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, thank you very much. That's it for policy.
Can you bring up that PowerPoint? The PowerPoint.
Okay, open public meeting, ACT training. Todd will do that.
So I just want to make you aware. So the state code requires that once a year you get training on Open Public Meetings Act. This year they changed the code to where that training also has to be made available online to you. So rather than us create something, the state auditor's office already has something. So what I want to do, this is your assignment for July. The executive committee said, hey, this is your assignment for July because we're not having a meeting. So I'm just going to walk you quickly through this. I am going to email it out to you so you'll have it. So I'm not expecting you to hurry and take notes, right? But I just want you to see it. Let's see. My little thing's not. Let's see if I can get it to work. Oh, look, there it goes. Okay, so this will be the website that you'll go to. And again, I'll send you this link. So all you'll have to do is click on the link. So again, those of you that have done this before, you may already have a login. If you haven't done this before, then you're going to click on Enroll Now. I don't know how to use the point. Whoops, that wasn't good. Nope. Well, I'm doing my usual thing. Anyway, you can see that Enroll Now there. You would click on that. That'll take you here, and you're going to want to select the Open and Public Meetings Act and hit View Course. Again, I'll send this PowerPoint to you so you'll have it. Then you're going to want to create an account if you don't already have one. If you already have one, you click on I already have an account. And then create or sign in to the account. It's going to bring you into this section. You'll start with a little survey from the state auditor's office, but down on the right-hand side, you can't read that probably, but there's a little green button that says next. So you'll just answer the survey questions, then hit next, and it just walks you through that. So you're just going to keep going through the things. This is actually a video that you'll watch, and this is the actual training. And so it's self-paced. You could watch it all at once. You can rewind it. You can watch 5 minutes, come back. It's about 15 minutes, not long at all.
I'm gonna watch it 1.5x speed.
You can do that if you want, for sure. So again, this is just, you just keep going through the things, and then always at the bottom right will be a button that says next that you click through. There's going to be a test at the end. You have to get 80%. You can retake the test if you don't get 80%. It's really pretty simple, but if you don't get 80%, just retake it. And so then you will come to this section here where it says, hey, you've completed, hooray, and it says get your certification. We need your certification for the file for when we get audited, right, that you've done this, that you've complied. And so I'll be bugging you with emails if by the end of July I'm not getting anything. I'll say, hey, remember, go get that. So once you get here, you hit get your certification. That's that blue bar there. And then it will bring you here, and you'll see this certification like that. You can't read it, but over on the left, there's several options. You can download the PDF so you have a copy. The thing I want you to do, by all means, you can download it, keep it for your own records. But there's a section there that says email. And so if you click on that and put in my email, and again, I'm going to email this to you, so you'll have my email right here in the PowerPoint. click and put my email in there and hit submit, it will come to me. You don't have to do anything else. They've made it really simple. And then I can just put that in your file, and when the auditor's office comes through, we have it. So that way, this completes your training for the year. We'll probably do this every year around this time, because I think it'll be a good exercise. Any questions?
Is this the same training we took once before?
Yeah, so before, you had to download a little manual and all these different things. They're just making it easier. And like I said, one of the requirements they changed this year is that it has to be available online. So rather than us create it, I really do think they're trying to get you to use the auditor's site, which is fine. It works really good. So rather than us create our own training, this is, hey, there you go. There it is. So there's other opportunities for you to look at other things too, but this is the one that is required annually that you do need to complete. So any questions? Any other questions? Okay. That's it for that.
Okay. Did you have anything for the general manager?
I do. So we've been talking about compensation, right? And that is always a hot button issue. So one of the things, we've been talking about service expansion, and we're going to be talking about that over the coming years. But one of the things that you may have seen is you may have seen an article in the paper about Logan City, you know, losing employees to other cities. You know, these articles about wages going up, things of that nature. So in the last 6 months, we've just seen this steady change in wages. And with unemployment at 2.9% or 2.8% in Cache Valley, I mean, that's really at full employment. What we've always tried to do with the frontline labor, with the bus drivers and that, is to be $2 to $3 ahead of entry-level positions, right? Because these folks have CDLs, they have training that's needed for that. They definitely have a skill, and they have a lot of responsibility. So we've tried to stay there. But when we look at what's happened here just recently, Walmart's at $11 an hour. You know, a lot of fast food places are $11, $12 an hour. We start at $12 an hour. And so we are going to be looking at adjusting wages with our hourly people, you know, maybe $1 to $2 an hour. And so I just want to prime that with you. I mean, we've seen that Logan City's done a 5% across-the-board increase with their employees. The Logan School District, I think, is looking at doing that type of thing as well. We're seeing that other places. And so we're going to be coming back to you with more detail and more information around that, and maybe a budget amendment at some point. But we're thinking we're not going to be able to make it to the next budget cycle. Some of these folks are in an advantageous spot. They're on a fiscal year, so they go from July 1st to June, and we're on a calendar year, so we're still 6 months away before we could change those wages for folks. So again, I think points have been made tonight about taking care of all parts of the organization. We 100% agree with that. We just want to make you aware of that, and we'll be coming back. We're not going to be meeting until August. And
yeah, so what's your timeline on that? Sorry to interrupt you.
Please.
I cut you off. But you'll have a meeting in August, and hopefully before October you have a preliminary budget to board, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when would you even have that time for that conversation?
Well, I think what we're looking to do, and Curtis, come in and jump in here, but what we're looking to do is actually we might even be doing those wage adjustments before that, and then coming back to the board and saying, hey, we may need to do a budget amendment. I mean, I'll just tell you flat out, you know, we try to staff our driver level to be at 80, 85 going into fall. We're down at 60. We're at the lowest levels we've been in a long time, and we're having a hard time bringing people in, and that's the problem. I mean, well, it's one of a couple problems, but it's one problem that can help us with some others that we need to address.
Yeah, we're identifying a lot of the root symptoms of what's happening, but what we've seen is this steady decline in applicants, and we thought we were going to be able to make it through the year, but the fact of the matter is we came in summer season, and normally we'd be able to hire 15 to 20 people over the summertime, gearing up and have them ready for the fall. So when Nicole talked, you know, we were sitting right around 91 employees. We should be at 105 right now. So we're already 14 employees short. We just went through a hiring class. We had 8 applicants. We'll probably end up with 5 people coming into training. 5, 91,
And one of the other root symptoms that, or root problems that Curtis is talking about here is we do try to be very flexible. We've always tried to do that, work with students, work with retired folks. But right now, because of our wages, that's hurting us because folks have two or three jobs and they're going, well, my other employer will not let me be flexible. I've got to be here. But they pay more than us. So where's their loyalty going to be? It's to that employer. And so our flexibility is kind of hurting us right now. So we're trying to figure out, you know, it's more than one factor. So
the reason why I ask and the reason why I bring it up is because it's somewhat fiscally irresponsible for a board to talk about wage increases in the third and the fourth quarter. It should be done in concert with the entire budget, just like capital expenditures was, because it is such an emotional topic, because it is so holistic to the planning. And if at all possible, it should be pushed into the budget cycle and be considered as a holistic part of the budget.
I agree with that in principle. Really,
when we had the budget in the fall, you said that most of them were worried about the benefit package. So we did give a big increase with their health insurance and stuff like that. So wouldn't it be better if we cut back the health coverage and increase their weight? Because before you said they wanted the health coverage first.
They do. Yeah, the health coverage is something from the full-time perspective that's important. But again, we employ a lot of part-time people that aren't getting that health coverage. So it's a combination of many things. I mean, that health coverage doesn't buy the part-time employee anything. And that's really what we're struggling with right now more than anything is the part-time employee, because of the 30-hour limit now that used to didn't be there, the 30-hour limit, now they have 2-3 part-time jobs to get the hours they need. And so again, other employers are saying, well, you've got to be here. They're paying more, so they're going there. That's the part-time crowd that we're talking about.
Patrick, to adjust your question, when we went through the budget, we mentioned that we were analyzing wages, and we weren't sure if that wage was going to hold for the year. We actually tried to put you on notice that there could be some adjustments during the year. We weren't going to build it into the budget. We specifically said we would come back to the board to talk about that potential when we started to see the need. And what's happening is we're starting to see the need.
And Curtis, to respond to that as how budget should be a holistic process, had we had this conversation in section, call it, where is that? If we would have had this on section 9, we probably wouldn't have voted for a $72,000 expansion in services.
Oh, I see your point.
We would have just said, hey, let's instead move it over to the employees, right? That's how the holistic process has to work.
It's a fair point. And again, that's a very fair point. I see what you're saying now there, Patrick.
I think you kind of answered my question, Chris, but you didn't. So when you did the budget originally, there was the total number of budget for salaries and so forth doesn't give you any latitude to be able to make these adjustments.
We were trying to keep it tight. That was the last thing that the board was giving us direction on, is keep the budget tight. And then if we need additional, then we come back to the board and say that there was a $400,000 excess that was designed to contribute to fund balance, but if we needed to tap into that, we would use that in order to pay for service expansion and or any wage adjustments that may be needed.
We didn't anticipate some of the low employment rates that we have right now, and that's putting a pressure on you that you didn't know about.
Well, and there were some other indicators. I mean, we had indicators that the one department store, Herberger's, was going to go out of business. We were watching to see some of the markets, and you know, there wasn't really a clear indicator. The tax cuts came through after the budget was adopted. I mean, those tax cuts weren't pushed through until well after the budget was adopted. So there's a number of factors that changed in that first quarter, and then coming into this one, and we've been trying to write it out. We've been trying to do different things to within what the budget allows, but we're just hitting that point where if we can't get drivers in, we're gonna start really facing challenges of meeting services.
But we did discuss this quite a bit, and we did bump them up a lot, and it was all in the benefit package because we didn't want zero out of the pocket. We didn't want to change our policy. So we did give you a big chunk there, and that's when I asked, do they want the wage increase or benefits? And you said they all want their benefit package better because they have hardly any deductible. They didn't change their coverage at all, and that's what you guys instructed us to do. And now you're saying you want.
So again, there's two different groups there. The full time do, they value that benefit. The part time don't get that benefit, and it's not the same. But you still, again, treat them the same wage-wise. But I understand your comment there, Norm. I get it. You're right. We did say that full-time crew definitely value the benefit, and they do.
Because I personally rather have more money, because luckily my family's pretty healthy, so health and coverage is not more important as the health coverage.
Yeah, but Norm, your health can change overnight.
I know. I agree.
You know, I mean, it's, you know,
but
in my lifetime, I never thought I would see career employees at McDonald's.
Right.
In all seriousness.
But
I never thought there would be a career employee at McDonald's. It's just like Disneyland in Anaheim. You know, you never thought that, you know, playing Mickey Mouse or whatever would be a career employee. And yet they're, you know, they've now unionized and they've now got a petition to get a minimum wage of $15 an hour.
And I'm hiring the same people.
So my tax dollar is competing against what we have here because I'm in the same problem. But that's why we act like we're blindsided, but we addressed this. We brought this up and we discussed it for a while.
But dynamics have changed.
Well, to put things in perspective, what percentage of part-time versus full-time employees do you have?
I don't know that percentage off the top of my head. What is that, Nicole?
About two. We have double part-time versus full-time, so that does impact benefits versus.
Again, Curtis talked about symptoms, and that's the thing. It's not one thing. The 30-hour thing, we used to could flex people up, and they loved that, right? Because they could flex up in the summer, and they would work more than 30 hours, you know, and that was fine, and then they would flex down a little bit more in the fall. But we can't do that. We don't have that flexibility like we used to. But, again, there's more than just one factor. I do appreciate your comment, Patrick. I see your point well taken. We'll try to present it more holistically in the future. I think that's a very valid point. Yeah. I'm just giving you information, and part of this is we're not having a meeting in July, and maybe we need to, and I'm open to that if we do need to.
In the spirit of candor, I'd like to reconsider expanding services.
Okay.
Just based on this, because it's new information. I agree with what you're saying. You're right. Market conditions have changed. Service levels have to change, too.
Part of the reason that we... But it's a valid point. It's a valid point. When we had talked with the board, we talked with the board about, look, revenues have grown to the point that we feel like there's $400,000 out there, and so this was $75,000 ask. The wage is, you know, $150,000 for a dollar, right, Curtis? If we went up, yeah, we're still doing analysis on that. But I mean, so we think it's within that $400,000 that's out there. But I it's a very valid point, and so I have no problem with what you're saying.
Is this something that needs to be remanded to the Finance Committee?
Doesn't it have to come through them before it comes to the full board?
Well, I mean, if you want it to be looked at, maybe have the Finance Committee examine it and look at it, and then bring it to the board with their recommendation.
It sounds like, again, there's concern. We can push it off and bring it to the board in August. We were trying to look at maybe doing some things to try and get recruitment up because, quite honestly, our bid for August isn't looking good. And so maybe we even consider having a meeting in July. I know that's probably not something you're wanting to do, but maybe it may be something that we would ask to do. So. We'll look at it, and then maybe we'll work with the chair and get in touch with you. Does that sound agreeable?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? It's been good discussion. Thank you for coming, and we'll see you in August unless we decide we need to come earlier. Adjourned.